You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 490. Now, the countdown to 500 begin. Punk News Podcast, episode 490. I've been saying the countdown to 500 begins for about 10 episodes now, but now, for real, 10 episodes away, the countdown begins. Howie Bullitt, what is your prognostication as to what we will do on Punk News Podcast 500?
Oh, what will you do? You'll all get naked, but no one will know because it's a podcast.
Edgy, but also Warholian, if you will. Adam White, Podcast 500. What do you suspect we've got cooking?
I just want to go outside, John. Let's see. 500, what are we? So we're 10 episodes from now. It is 490. That puts us into, what, early summer?
Yes.
Right?
12 weeks away. 10 weeks away. 3 months.
10 weeks away. 3 months. So, I mean, If everything goes well, maybe we could all get naked and go outside. I just, I don't know.
You mean in like modern, like pro sexuality or ancient times pro pagan worship style nakedness?
John, I'll take what I can get at this point. I don't think we can be too choosy about as long as we're outside, then I'll just go with the flow. So 500. I feel like we had planning. We had grand planning that we were going to talk about for that. And then at some point, the world went crazy. And then we stopped planning, but we just keep talking about it. So what's going to happen is it's going to be, you know, June whatever. And we're going to be sitting here and we're going to look at the clock or the ticker or whatever the fuck we use to track which episode we're at. And it's going to be episode 500 and we're going to have not planned anything.
Listen, listeners. I've got stuff up my sleeve. I don't know what it is yet, but I've got something planned. How are you doing today? How are you feeling? What's happening? What's going on?
I'm feeling good. You know, I feel like this shit could get like a lot worse than it is for me right now. Maybe I'm not wishing that upon myself, but you know, you see what's going down. And so things for me right now are cool. They're fine. I'm like not in my home anymore. I've fled my freaking home in Queens, New York, but I got a safe, comfortable place to be. I got food to eat and I got my love of my life. I got my baby. So I'm just trying to just look at it as like, I'm good, you know?
Howie, I'm going to toss you the keys for the episode. Shall we be hardcore reality and address the COVID-19 issues facing today, or just for today, should it be escapism and do light and whimsical today on the podcast? What are you thinking?
I think we can do both. I think we can totally talk about, like, because there's not everything in music is affected by COVID right now, right? But we can, like, talk about the, like, culture part of it and not, like, the grim part of it. How about that?
Well said, wise, how Solomonic, if you will. I love the word Solomonic. It's one of my favorite words. Adam White, Solomonic. What famous singer has the Solomonic record label?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not even sure if I know what Solomonic means. John, define Solomonic for me.
Solomonic, of course, in reference to the great King Solomon of the Torah and Bible, considered a wise man and a measured man. Solomonic means able to make decisions with impartiality, fairness, but also goodwill and kindness towards humanity. Solomonic.
Nice.
Is this going to be a word that you start working into your podcast conversations? Because
I'm pretty Solomonic with my word application and whether or not I should use a word. So like King Solomon, you know, I like to be fair and just, you know, and when I have to split an issue in two, I just say to myself, How could I be more solid? All right. I beat that joke.
Well, no, because I asked because there's an individual that I listen to on several other podcasts, and I was trying to get through my backlog, which right now is been really, really killed by the whole not having a commute thing. But I was trying to get through my backlog, and I was doing what I don't normally do, which was like listening to podcasts on 1.5 speed, because there was no way that I was going to catch up with anything unless I cut some corners. And I came to realize that this individual loves the word pernicious.
That's a good word. I like pernicious.
It's a great word. But and then I realized they use it in like every other episode that they record. And I was like, oh, like now that I've heard it once and I've clued into it, like every time, like I want a bell to ring or something every time this guy says pernicious, because it keeps coming back. Salomonic feels a little bit more archaic in its etymology. So I don't know if that one's going to fly. I think that'll stick out like a sore thumb.
How about Abrahamic or Abrahamic?
You see, Abrahamic, I would be less shocked by than if Solomonic had coming up. Oh shit, John, what do we do? What is this show about? I think I'm with Hallie, by the way, on this. I mean, we can't avoid the whole global pandemic thing, but, I feel the same in that. I'm sort of privileged enough that my days aren't dire. Like, you know, my people are all healthy and hunkered down, and it's, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I'm not consumed by sadness, and I don't want the show to project that. So let's
have some fun.
Let's try.
Best way to have some fun is you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. We've got one scrap up and one fun email. You guys, I guess we'll do the scrap up first, which I had opened and now I lost. So as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org, and we love getting your mail. And here is the scrap up email, which I got recently. And this is from Liverpool Neil. And Liverpool Neil is mad because I attacked him directly last week or the week before because he's got an Amy Winehouse shrine in his house. And he's mad that I sometimes don't talk about punk rock or the Punk News podcast. So I made fun of him for having an Amy Winehouse shrine in his house. And here's Liverpool Neil's response. Hive chaps, long time no write. But seeing as though Tom and I have our own podcast now, airing views on both seem greedy. But John, I couldn't let your comments about me on episode 489 go unanswered. Yes, I have an Amy Winehouse wall. I love Amy. I also love Elvis, Johnny Cash, rockabilly, and lots of other non-punk music. However, the point is I would never dream of playing any of them on the Punk Till I Die podcast. That's the difference. Look, I think it's great that you love all kinds of music. I really do. We even agree on some of it. But that doesn't mean that stuff belongs on the punk... That doesn't mean that stuff belongs on a podcast called Punk News, i.e. news about punk. You want to do a general music pod? More power to you. Excellent. But a show with the word punk in the title should be centered around, you know, punk, not rap or 80s pop. Public Enemy has been the central feature twice in the last few episodes, for God's sakes. And to correct you on one other thing, I never complained about you playing Alice Bag of the Screamers and said that's not punk. So I'd like a retraction on that. It must have been from another listener. What I have complained about is playing rap and running reviews of modern pop like Taylor Swift. There's a billion other places where you can see that kind of content if you want. I just don't expect to see on a punk website, just like I wouldn't expect to see a conflict review on a Taylor Swift website. Okay, ran over, stay free, and listen to my new podcast, Punk Till I Die, from Liverpool Neil. First, I'll say I'm not looking to fight with Liverpool Neil. I like Liverpool Neil. Liverpool Neil's a good guy. I think we're just not going to agree. I will just briefly reiterate. I don't think one Taylor Swift review in an ocean of 80 to 100 other punk reviews makes anything less punk. And I do think if you feel as though one Taylor Swift review is going to hurt or damage punk, then maybe punk's not that strong to begin with. As always, I don't see punk as rules or restrictions. I see punk as a prism through which you view the outside world. And also, you know, all the first wave punkers, you know, John Lydon and Joe Strummer, Steve Ignorant, Penny Rimbaud, the Ramones, Black Flag, all those guys loved all kinds of music and didn't just restrict themselves to punk. I can understand how Liverpool Neil tuning in to the Punk News podcast wants to hear about punk. And I feel we talk about punk most of the time. But I think a little deviation here and there is good. As I always say, you don't always want to give the audience exactly what they want. And so I think we should kind of agree to disagree. I like Liverpool, Neil. And I think that's where we're at with regards to that. But here's a more fun letter. This is from Teg, and here's what Teg has to say. I've got a different game than the Desert Island game. There's a house fire. Which three albums do you grab with you on the way out the door? The difference is not what albums would you most likely want to listen to over and over, but what is the most precious to you? What are your picks? And fight over it. I love the fights. From Teg. So Hallie or Adam, I'll let you guys answer first.
Oh, you know, my answer is going to be so lame, because I would grab like my records and like my husband's records. I don't want that. I wouldn't want to not have those. I mean, I guess, yeah, like my records that aren't in print anymore, like my, you know, my 7 inches and like, you know, the stuff that I put out. That's a boring answer, but that's what I would grab.
Oh, that's a fair answer. I think that's fair. Yeah. And plus, listen, people, Hallie Bush, she's been in many bands, at least three that I know of, maybe four. They're all real good, so check them out. No, five. I can think of five off the top of my head.
I can't even think of five. You're doing great. You're doing better than me. I don't remember my own life.
Unlovables, Hiccup, the LLC band. There's one other band that you were in.
Lost Locker Combo, which was like turned into the LLC. Oh, and the Hissy Fits.
There you go. There you go. So check out those bands. Hallie Bullet, a lot of great bands.
Thanks, John.
That's not a lame answer. That's a pretty good answer.
Well, I hope. Well, you know, I don't know if it has like a broad appeal, or like gets people that excited. Adam, maybe you have like some records that people would be like, "Yes, hell yes, you have to grab that when the building is burning."
No, see, I think that there are people that would say that, but they live in like a very small swath of Southern Ontario, and I probably know most of them on Instagram or something. So my weirdly narrow tastes are incredibly regional. So I think that's gonna really screw me up here. But okay, so yeah, I think I've mentally itemized what they would be. So the first one that I would grab would actually be a CD, even though I have expressed incredible disdain for CDs on the show multiple times and I hate them. But this one I would keep. So the very first Constantine's record, the debut Constantine's record, which is called Constantine's, it was put out on Three Gut, which was like a little label that was run out of Toronto or Guelph back in 2000. It came in this like paper digipack, I don't want to say digipack as if it's like one of those, that's what they're called, right? Those,
Digipacks,
right?
Yeah.
Those paper sleeve ones, right? It wasn't one of those paper sleeve ones that was made by a factory. It was one where, like, the band, either themselves or via someone that does art, like, cut up cardboard and red crate paper and everything and made the CD case out of it. And then in the CD case, right in front of where the CD slots in, there's a single Strike Anywhere match that was, like, slotted in as part of this being an art project, like stuck in there. And I didn't think anything of that when I bought it. I just knew that like I was going to university in a town called Guelph. They were the big local band. They had that at like the, you know, the boring generic mall CD store just sitting on the shelf. And I bought one, and it is both like incredibly rare, incredibly sought after. Like people are diehards of that band, and they're a band that like tons of people don't even know who they are. But if you know who they are, you can be a really deep diehard on them. And they can't get a copy of that because they just don't exist. So the fact that I have one, just because I opportunely happened to live in the apartment that we lived in college was like next to the mall, and I kind of wandered through there to get to school or something like that. And that band has just like become my band in a way. So the fact that I all stumbled upon that, that one would come with me. I would also, and this is super boring, I would take the vinyl version of that same record, which came out on Sub Pop, only because it was one of these things that, again, you can't find it. You can't find it anywhere around here because everyone wants it. It's one of those damn things that I had to, you know, like get someone in Europe to ship me on Discogs for more than I would pay for most things. So I feel that there's money sunk into that sucker, so it's coming with me. But then outside of that, I feel like I feel like there's a 7-inch that came out on Mammoth Cave Records 3 or 4 years ago that was called Bloodstains Across Ontario. And it was a comp that had songs by the White Wires and I want to say maybe the Steve Ademic Band on it. And I want to grab the damn thing. It's right here. Hold on. As a project, I made my daughter organize my 7-inches because we're all bored and stuck in the house together. So this is great. I can just go over here now. Just go to the various section. Although I have to say, I really had to explain to a child what the various section means and why I'm putting things in it that do not actually start with V. And she was very, very confused and thought it was a ridiculous thing. Young Gov's on there from Fucked Up, but back when he like billed himself as Young Governor, Shadowy Man and a Shadowy Planet are on the thing. Yeah, Steve Ademic, the White Wires, Peach Kelly Pop, which is the White Wires drummer. So it's all these like all these crazy like Ontario-based little punk and garage bands and stuff like that that have totally come to define what I do in my day to day as a person that writes about music on the internet now. And it's also just like the most badass looking cover. This like map of the province and like black relief with little blood drip at the bottom of it. It's cool. So I don't know. Is that three? It's like two of the same record and then one of that. And then there are other things that I think fall into that. Oh shit. The third, I have a vinyl copy, an original non-reissue vinyl copy, I think, of Curve of the Earth, which is the Attack in Black record that they released after Marriage, after their big popular one, where basically the band released this record on Dynalone. It was a huge record within like the Ontario alt rock world. It had a bunch of kind of big, good radio singles on it. The band, which are all a bunch of stubborn artist people, decided that having a record full of big radio hits is really the last thing that they wanted to do. So they got together with like a 4-track recorder and recorded just a bunch of weird folky songs and put that out as Curve of the Earth like a week after Marriage, which is the original record, like a week after Marriage was released by the big label. And everything on Curve of the Earth sonically has come to define like the next decade of what Daniel Romano and all those people were doing. So yeah, that one. Those are my important records. They're important to Adam. I don't think they're necessarily monetarily important, although I could probably fetch a pretty penny for them from like the right people. But none of them saved my children's life either. So those aren't sentimental picks from that standpoint. What about you, John?
Well, I'll say probably the first thing that I'm grabbing is my Flames record. And we've talked about the Flames a lot on the Punk News podcast. The Flames is the record that I found in a used record shop. And it turned out it had never come out. And there was a handwritten telephone number on the back of the record. And I called it. And it turned out it was the guy from the Flames. And he never put out the record because he had a nervous breakdown. So I put it out and we had a lot of fun. So I would definitely grab my Flames record that is with the telephone number written on the back by Michael J. Richards himself. I'm probably going to grab my original press first World in Front of Friendship Society 7-inch because, A, it's got a handmade cover with a playing card glued to it, and also the B-side is available nowhere else. And I guess third, I'll probably grab my Melvins live box set because it truly is a work of art because it's got hand paintings and hand drawings and secret messages written in pencil all over it. And it truly is a work of art. So it's big and bulky, but I'm grabbing those three and I'm running out the door. So listeners, write in and tell us what three records you would grab with you on your way out the door, which is a little different than the Desert Island test, which is, I guess, which albums would you most want to hear? Anyways, you can always use that podcast at punknews.org. Let's play a song and come back and hit some news. Who's got some songs?
Well, here, I'll throw one right in here because it's going to thematically, I think, play into a few of the first stories that we're going to talk about here. So everyone's cooped up. They're all living in isolation, living in their own individual places. Bands are trying to figure out what to do. And what they're doing is trying to record, trying to put stuff out. They're either live streaming their whole, you know, live streaming everything, or they're making records. And here is a band that I feel like got ambitious with making a record. So Real Sickies, they're a band, they're on Stomp Records. They had a record that came out last year called Out of Space. They have a like teenage head and early Ramones kind of vibe to them. Ben Disaster, who is the lead singer to it, is a relatively big radio personality in like the Canadian like college radio station punk universe, and he does a ton of work promoting other bands and everything like that. So anyways, so the Real Sickies, they're all in isolation in Edmonton. They all decided that they were going to make a record, and that as a challenge to themselves, they were going to make this record in front to back in 7 days. So they each, you know, individually from where they were, wrote, recorded, they mixed, they mastered, and they put out this 10 song record called Quarantined that is not like a bunch of guys sitting around strumming on acoustic guitars. It's like it's a Ramonesy sounding punk record. It sounds like a Real Sickies record. And they did it in a week, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to play a song from that. Let's see. I think I'm going to play Wash Your Hands because it is very much thematically about the new world that we're living in. So, okay. So this is Real Sickies. We're going to play, Washed My Hands is the name of the song. So we're going to play Wash My Hands off of Quarantined. You can find this thing at realsickies.bandcamp.com and you should support it. Any of the money that they're raising, by the way, from selling this sucker is going to the WHO's COVID-19 response fund. So here you go. This is a song that, as far as we know, did not exist a week ago in any way, shape, or form. This is Washed My Hands by Real Sickies.
And that was Wash My Hands by the Real Sickies. Big news in OrgCore Week this week. Fest 19. In the face of COVID-19. In the face of countless tours delayed. In the face of quarantines and shutdowns. Fest 19 has announced its plans. Gambling that the COVID-19 issue will be cleared up by the time of Fest 19. And boy, do we all hope it is cleared up by then, because, woo, it's a long time away. Anyways, Fest 19, October 30, October 31. November 1 in Gainesville, Florida, the headliners, Hot Water Music, playing two nights. The first night, A Flight and a Crash in Full. The second night, Fan Requests. Cursive playing two nights. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Playing one night. They're playing Domestika. Sam I Am playing all of Ashtray. Flatliners playing all of Cavalcade. And, of course, many of you might be thinking, John, I thought the Flatliners were a contemporary recent band, which they are, but that only shows how old you are and that they're already hitting their 10-year anniversary for a seminal album. Also playing Frank Turner, Sparta, Red City Radio, Strike Anywhere, Torch, Good Riddance, Modern Life is War, Wilhelm Scream, and Tim Barry, as well as many other bands, including Mustard Plug, Copyrights, Moving Targets, Gougeway, and many, many other bands. Other bands are going to be announced. But it seemed as though, and I don't want to speak, well, I'm not going to speak, well, the general from the comment section, and you can't always rely on the comment section because, in effect, the comment section is actually often opposite what popular opinion actually is. Like, if you took 100 punks from the comment section and compared it to 1,000 punks in general, the opinions are usually flip-flopped more often than not, but not always. Anyways, a lot of people in the comment section said, well, there's nothing here that's really blowing me away yet. But I'm just going to go because it's Fest. I love going to Fest. And it's cool to meet up and see the same usual group of bands in a positive way. It's like, that is, anytime I go to Fest, my favorite band's going to be there. And it's going to be a good time. Hallie and Adam, do you have a perspective on Fest 19? Are they being optimistic, too optimistic? And are you interested in the lineup?
I mean, more than being interested in the lineup, like, if this is all, like, over by the fall, like... Please, dear Lord. I just think that's going to be a fucking great party, you know, because I do think we're going to probably be dealing with this through the summer. And so, you know, if we have, in fact, put this behind us enough to be able, for there to be able to be a festival, my God, how happy are people going to be? That's going to, I don't care who's playing. That's going to be the most completely joyous fest there's ever been. So, you know, God willing, it happens. And I mean, I would think about going. I think it's going to be so, like, just pure joy. That's what I think.
I've been despairing about festivals because the ones that are really close to my heart are, they're in August. So they're still holding out hope and they've yet to cancel, but like all the May stuff, of course, canceled. And we all knew that. And the June stuff's all canceled. And I get that's precautionary. And the stuff that's kind of creeping into early July, I've seen a few of them cancel, but everyone else is sort of holding their breath on it. But
I'm Summer Soiree 4.
Yeah, right. But when it comes to like I feel that in my heart of hearts, the ones that me and my wife want to travel to in August are going to get canceled on us, right? And that is the one thing out of all of this, like out of all the death and despair and all and everything, that's the thing that I think is like just secretly bum me out the most. But I'm starting to turn my view on it to more of what Hallie is thinking, where even if the things that I want to go to get canceled, there will be other things when we come out the other end of this, because this is not the end of the universe. And when those things come out, there's going to be just like such a newfound, I think, just appreciation for being there, for just being able to convene with people of a similar interest and watch live music happen. I'm almost looking forward to the catharsis of that more than I am seeing any individual band or act or anything like that at this point. So from that standpoint, yeah, I totally think that anything happening in the fall, fest or otherwise, is going to have just like a fucking glow about it. So out of context, I can kind of see where the readers would be coming from looking at this. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that I enjoy. It's just not like cross the border and fly to Florida enjoy. So like Hot Water Music, in that case, like, you know, they are like, they're a Gainesville band, right? So they're a consummate band to be playing this kind of thing. You know, those would be great shows. For me personally, like A Flight and a Crash is my Hot Water Music record. So that was the record where I really latched onto them and, you know, explored the back catalog from there and all of that. So I'd love to see that record performed live. You know, I'm a Flatliners fan. Cavalcade's a great record. Again, though, I wouldn't go to Florida to see them play Cavalcade, because I could probably see them play it, like, you know, down the street in the fall or something instead of that. But yeah, but like everything else here is not it's not hooking me. It's not wowing me from that standpoint. And I was talking about this with our buddy our buddy Neil, because John hasn't burnt all of our bridges, and Neil still talks to me. And I was saying that because Neil was very anti. I don't think I need to hide that, because I think he told them outright on the internet. He's very anti this lineup. But I said, you know what? I mean, like, I would, if any of these bands, if 98% of these bands, of any of this list were playing the town over from me, I'd go see them. So from that standpoint, like, and maybe that's just a view that's rooted in my craving of seeing, you know, live humans that aren't my darling children. Right. Like, I would go see any of these bands. I wouldn't call many of these bands that I'm a gigantic fan of, but hell, I'd go see them. So you're going to put enough of them in a place, and then you add in all of the, you know, coming out the other side of a disaster goodwill. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm cool. And this is early. It's early lineup anyways.
Well, as usual, I'm going to make this all about me. In that, you know, fast music is not really my style, but I think it's well done for what people want to check out and will have fun. The common criticism of Fest is that it's always the same few bands. And honestly, that's been somewhat of a criticism of the Punk New Summer soirees. Soiree 1 was World Inferno. Soiree 2 was Sturgeon and Joe Jack Talcum. Soiree 3 was World Inferno and Joe Jack Talcum. Soiree 4 is going to be Dan Burt, and I threw a show with Dan Burt before, and people were like, well, they played last year. And I'm like, yeah, they played last year, 12 months ago. I mean, like I'll see World Inferno like 4 or 5 times a year. When I lived in the Bay Area, I would see KRS-One 6 times a year. I'd see Melvins 4 times a year. I guess I truly don't understand why people like say, oh, I saw that band last year. Yeah, last year. They're going to play totally different sets. So I understand that to one perspective. On the other perspective, if you're down with a band, like, don't you want to see them at least once per year? Along those lines, though, as Hallie was saying, like, Summer Soiree 4 is scheduled for August 1 right now with Dan Burt of Chumbawamba record release show. And I really hope it takes place, because I know Dan Burt's very excited. I'm ultra excited. And not to be ghoulish, but it might play out in our favor, in that maybe August will be right when this whole thing breaks, in which case people will be looking to get down on that wavelength. If they just do a hard end of the quarantine, which I don't know if they would, if they were like, quarantine's over, man, those next 48 hours are going to be insane. Like, I don't even know if people go out, because it might be like a little, it might be like the purge. You know what I mean? Man, so we'll see.
There was an interesting wrinkle on this that I saw from some smaller bands talking on Twitter, where they were saying that this has actually really screwed up of course, screwed up everything. But one of the things that it has screwed up is it's impossible if you're a band that is on the smaller scale right now to try to book anything in the safe zone. Like, if we're going to presume that the fall is the safe zone, right? It's impossible to book anything there, because a lot of the bigger agencies and the bigger bands in the world have holds on a lot of the venues, so that they can, you know, like, reschedule their shows or get back out on the road and support the record that they're supposed to be releasing over the summer or whatever. So there's all these like blocks in the schedule where if you're just some up and coming band and you want to try to go like put together a tour for yourself and you don't have an agent, it's way harder now, because the system is all just gummed up with all the bigger acts just sort of like, you know, like soaking up everything on spec. So
it is going to suck even for the bigger bands, because everybody's going to be needing to hit the road. Everybody needs to make money. I mean, this is for people that, like, this is their jobs. Like, people are going to need to get back to work as soon as this lifts. And so I think you're going to have a situation, you know, where, like, you've got, like, a bunch of big bands all trying to play the same cities at the same time and all competing with one another, and it's just going to be a mess. I mean, for fans, it'll be like a smorgasbord, I predict, but I think for bands, it's going to be hard. You know, they're going to need to make up that money, and then I think there's just going to be so much competition. Like, I could see it just sucking for everybody.
Well, listen, bands, you call up the Johnny G, and Johnny G will get you a DIY show in Philly. Guaranteed attendance, 150 people. I know that might be a bit much for some of you, but 150, we can make it happen. But listen, speaking of festivals that have not fared as well, Punk Rock Bowling, they tried to hang in there. Of course, as we all know, Punk Rock Bowling was supposed to be Labor Day weekend. Memorial Day weekend this year, which is in May. But then it was pushed back till the fall sometime. But I guess actually they pushed it back to right around the same time as Fest is. But then somewhat surprising last week, Punk Rock Bowling said, it's not going to happen this year. We just can't make it happen. We're going to kick it all the way 12 months forward to Memorial Day weekend 2021. They stated that most of the bands will – not most. They said a lot of the same bands that were billed will be returning to Punk Rock Bowling 2021. The headliners, of course, were Circle Jerks, Madness, and Coxbar. It seems as though a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's gonna be all the same bands. Man, I think it's gonna be a lot of different bands, just because like there's three or four or five people in a band, so even one band changing things, you know, can throw everything off. So changing for 40 to 100 bands, I think that's a big changeover. And another thing is with Punk Rock Bowling, you know, I went last year and it was crazy good, crazy good. This year I thought the lineup was okay. But I think Punk Rock Bowling is the Stern Brothers or Mark Stern's main income. I don't know, but I think it's like his main thing. And so for him to push it back a whole year, like that's basically a whole year without cash, right? So I like Punk Rock Bowling. So I hope it fares all right. And I mean, that's a pretty significant – I assume they have insurance. Actually, I just thought – I'm sure they have some kind of insurance, and I would guess insurance would cover this kind of thing, but maybe not, you know? I don't know. I guess you could say who's playing the right hand? Fest gambling hard or Punk Rock Bowling gambling not hard, I guess.
Well, I wonder how much like the proximity of already booked events like Fests like had in that decision, because the exact same decision was made by Pooza. So Pooza was supposed to happen on like the May 21st weekend, and it of course is way too close to now that it had to move. And they did the same thing as Punk Rock Bowling, where they just knocked it a clear year in, you know. And I feel like it's the same sort of situation. Like I never thought too much about where you know where the Sterns make their income from, but you know, BYO isn't exactly burning up the charts with new releases or anything, right? So what else do they have going on, I guess? So yeah, that's why like this is the financial implications for a lot of for bands and venues and everyone of all of this is just. It's staggering. It's staggering.
It's like the dominoes just like are lined up for as far as you can see. Do you know what I mean? Like you just can't. It's like you just start thinking of the repercussions and you're like, where does it stop for people? Sorry, we said we weren't going to get grim about
this. I know, but we kind of have to. But the one flip side about this is to put on my socialist hat here is that there's to a degree the fact that we're all sort of fucked is maybe one of the silver linings of it, where it's not that like, oh, this is impacting, you know, some particular region or city or industry. It's like it's impacting everyone, and yeah. At a certain point the powers that be can't just like, you know, cast everything out to the wind and just let anarchy reign until the world resorts itself. So
there, are you sure, Adam, in 2020 are you sure you want to I'll tell you, things a little iffy.
I'm not, it's within the realm of possibility, but I had this conversation with someone today who during my day job, where they called me up because I'm working from home here. So one of the people I'm working with that just like coincidentally works in, I have a client that works in like genetics and genomics and stuff like that. And this is like the aliens have landed for them. Like they're all on board with this. It's like everything that they're out there in the world trying to promote is all of a sudden on the top of everyone's mind. But in any case, I was talking to one of them and they're like, oh, you know, how's it going? How's your business? How's everything, you know, how are you keeping your staff on and all that? And my answer was sort of the same thing. I was like, well, you know, like there's a whole bunch of government subsidies that we can now take advantage of. And those subsidies are going to help us at least for the next few months, you know, keep the lights on and keep everyone employed and all that. And then they were like, well, what happens after that? And it was like, well, you know what, if all those subsidies just stopped, it's way more of a problem for, you know, the universe than it is for just my business. So there'll be something else. And John, to come back to what you were saying, it's, you know, I mean, we're all going to burn together or we're all going to be saved together, I guess, is where I'm coming at with that. Like, if we're not going to get to a point, I think, where all of a sudden, you know, the world is fine, except for Idaho. Like Idaho has to burn, but the rest of us have come out of this okay. Like, I feel that like no, if we're going to burn, we're all going to burn. So you can take a little bit of solace in that. That's sort of a weird point, but you know.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
We've got one more semi doom and gloom story, but this is more about sticking it to the man. And then we got some happy stuff coming up. So let's do classic Greek theater style. Let's finish up the tragedy. We'll play some music. We'll resort to the in Greek theater. What do you call the people that sing?
The chorus.
The chorus.
And then we'll come back and we'll have some comedy. So listen, StubHub. Their mad range continues, and yet again they're saying law does not apply to us because, of course, the very existence of StubHub was in defiance of law. As Adam and I have discussed many times in the podcast, we're pretty sure scalping used to be illegal until StubHub suddenly decided, no, scalping's totally legal, and we're going to do it. And then everyone said, okay, let's let scalping be legal now. And, of course, we also talked about the ramifications of that, in that the poor guy on the street who was scalping tickets at a much cheaper rate than StubHub does – literally got arrested, and there's racial implications there. There's class implications there. But then some rich guy said, no, I think I should be allowed to scalp. He's making tons and tons of money. Well, not only that, it's gotten even worse. With the COVID-19, a whole bunch of events were postponed or outright canceled. The NHL has caused at least one gentleman some real issue. The NHL said the season is suspended. The problem with that is, right until COVID-19, StubHub had two types of things. An event was either canceled or postponed. If it was canceled, you got your money back. If it was postponed, you didn't get your money back, but you got a credit. Then, as soon as the quarantine went into effect, and as soon as the NHL suspended the season, which no one even really knows what that means, they changed their user policy. They changed the user policy to say that if your event was canceled, then you either get StubHub credit, or when the event is re-announced, you can go to that event instead. The weird part about that is they enacted that policy retroactively as people that had already bought events before the whole quarantine thing happened. So this one guy out in Wisconsin, his name is Matt McMillan. He bought a ticket to an NHL game before the whole quarantine thing happened, and then the season was, quote, suspended. And then after it was suspended, StubHub said, oh, no one's getting their money back now, but you get credit. So, of course, McMillan, not really him, rather a law firm that specifically sought him out and identified them, is now filing a class action against StubHub. And not only that, is one of the demands in the complaint is, we don't want store credit. We don't want bonus credits, like the whole ridiculous time. Well, actually, the three times that Ticketmaster has been busted for class action suits, you got a $2 credit, which they charge you back anyways on the checkout section anyways. So they're saying, we want money back, and we want an injunction ordering StubHub to give people their money back if they want their money back. So the class action is going into effect. Will it see trial? Almost definitely not, because class actions, 99.9% of class actions never make it to trial. And that's a true fact. The point being is, is this all really just some attorneys trying to get some easy cash, which it is because it's on settle, and the attorneys will get lots of money? Or is this really some guy or a group of people fighting against StubHub? And I will say, not to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but when the whole StubHub thing and the ticket resale market became legal, I foresaw doom and gloom, and I don't see it lighting up anytime soon. I see it just getting worse and more abusive. And as we've said, listen, there are greater injustices in the world than paying too much for a ticket. That's purely a pleasure thing. You don't have to pay for a ticket, but it is annoying. So I've got some thoughts,
John, maybe you would know a little better, but I just don't see how it could be legal to change your policy and then apply that retroactively. If you had a policy when I used your service, then I don't get how you can change that. Although, I mean, I think the courts are going to be, again, you're saying this probably won't come to trial and it probably won't, but I think in a lot of ways the courts are just going to be gunked up for forever with stuff like this, because is this pandemic just a circumstance that no entity, corporation, business, big or small, could have foreseen? And so it does maybe then give them some wiggle room to change their policies. I don't know. I would be actually really interested, John, to hear like what you think.
Well, the courts are gunked up right now. As regards to the legal thing, if you have a contract, that would clearly be breach of contract. However, yeah. In the modern age, contracts are more complex than ever, because what if there's an online user policy, and what if the online user policy has a clause that says, we can amend these at any time and apply them retroactively. Now, is that fair? The answer is nobody really knows, because it's a new thing, and many courts have ruled in different ways all over, state courts, federal courts, you name it. There is not one solid answer to that question, and there probably isn't going to be one solid answer to that question, because these kinds of things usually settle. From a policy standpoint, I want to know, and I do know why, but I'm going to ask anyways. I want to know, how come in good times, When StubHub is getting 800% on a ticket, they get the benefit of that. Say, oh, well, listen, StubHub's got a service. You know, people want to buy it. That's the free market. In good times, they get to reap the benefit. But in bad times, when their bargain craps out on them, they say, oh, well, the free market doesn't apply to us now. Now it's, you know, a policy, you know. So yeah. And that's how it always is, isn't it? You know what I mean? So I mean, and from a certain, I can understand. I mean, I'm not going to say bailing out banks is good or bailing out whatever is good, but there's a reason behind that, which is those are keystones to the economy. And if you don't bail them out, then everything falls apart. But you can't make that argument with tickets. You know, if StubHub dies, if StubHub dies, honestly, everyone's going to be happy. You know what I mean? So it's just creepy rich guys being creepy. That's what it is. And what's really going to happen is it's going to settle. And honestly, people probably might get like a dollar in the mail, or they might just get like store credit, because we don't want store credit. We want cash. That is, I mean, honestly, all class actions are not really people suing. It's a law firm suing. And the idea, the theory behind class action is, well, Adam's not going to sue StubHub for $5 because he doesn't have the resources to sue for $5. He doesn't want to spend the time. So we allow class actions so a whole bunch of people can easily bring a lawsuit at once to discourage companies from, you know, kind of just shaving off the top a little bit. That's the idea behind a class action. However, what in reality it's a law firm sees a way to get money, and they don't really care about the damaged class so much. They're saying, well, we're going to get, you know, $20 million in legal fees. And then, you know, do I really care if my client gets $5 back or store credit? I don't care. And that's usually what happens with class actions. Not always, but usually. The exception will be like the classic asbestos cases and those kinds of things. But with these kind of, like with the Ticketmaster class action joke, which where you got like $1.50 credit, which Ticketmaster charged you for anyway upon checkout, it's ridiculous.
Or credit to go see a concert that you had no interest in, the ones that they like couldn't like give away tickets to, like the crappiest concerts in the history of music.
You get long. Toby Keith, yeah.
Oh,
you know. So I hate to be doom and gloom with these tickets, but listen, there's one way to fight. Vote with your dollar, because the courts aren't going to save you. Congress certainly isn't going to save you. Vote with your dollar. Go to your local punk show. And you know what, man? I mean, like, if Morrissey's got a sold-out show, if I don't know, I'm trying to think who's – like, Billy Joel's got a sold-out show, Paul McCartney, don't go from a scalper. do the punk thing, baby. Sneak in. Paul McCartney's already paid, so you don't need to worry about ripping him off because he's already been paid. He's not getting any more of that money. StubHub is. So listen, baby, do the punk thing. Sneak in.
Yeah. All right. I don't think to add to that. John, you were very, very comprehensive. That was.
Let's play a song. Hallie Boy, you want to play a song or you want me to play a song?
I can play a song. Yeah, I'm like, so I think I saw like a pretty great review actually on the punk news site of this new the new Thick record that just came out on Epitaph. And like this band Thick is so fun, and like I've played shows with them, and it's like completely crazy to me that they're on Epitaph, not because they're not great, but just because I didn't see that coming. But these women are like so, like they put on such a good live show, and I like this band. I think like I'm going to play this song, but I will say just to anybody, if you even remotely like this song, if there's anything about it that's interesting to you, like see this band live. They really know how to put on like a really fun show. They like really rock. This is from this album 5 Years Behind that just came out on Epitaph, I think like yesterday or the day before. This is Thick doing Sleeping Through the Weekend.
And that was Thick off the new album, 5 Years Behind, doing Sleeping Through the Weekend. Rising Buzz Band, a lot of people are digging them. Cool band, Thick. All right, let's hit some happy stories here. First up on the Happy Pappy lineup, Jade Hairpins. Of course, Jade Hairpins is a side project of F'd Up's Mike Halachuk and Jonah Falco. And they've got a new project called Jade, well, not a new project, a project called Jade Hairpins, which sprung out of the Dozier Dreams
cosmology.
Good work. Good usage there, Adam. And it doesn't really sound like F'd Up. It's kind of more dancey college rock, I guess you could say. But not only that, is F'd Up has another spinoff project with Mike Halachuk and Jonah Falco, as well as the lead singer from Power Trip. And it's much more industrial. It's kind of like Godflesh It is called Masterpiece Machines. And so they've got – it's basically the same band or the same group, two guys, two different sides, dancing college rock and Godflesh-style industrial rock punk, if you will. Adam White, what's your stance?
I was late for the podcast, and I didn't hear your Skype call because I was watching the video again for Don't Break My Devotion, which is the second Jade Hairpin single that just came out. And I was just totally lost in it. Like I'm so delightfully entranced by what's happening in that video that I lost all sense of time and forgot to actually join the show when I was supposed to. So that's my opinion. I'm inclined to be positive about what's going on with People Out of the Fucked Up Universe, because they're one of my favorite bands and they're some of my favorite songwriters that are in there. But I am just delighted by this, like the crazy synth pop weirdness that's coming out of Jade Hairpins. It's super playful. It definitely takes itself like not seriously at all. It's not a joke act or anything like that. Don't get me wrong, but there isn't a lot of pretension in it. And it's to see that sort of level of whimsy and glee come out of, you know, a couple guys that are known for being, you know, in this very intense hardcore band is just kind of delightful. And I really enjoy seeing Mike and Jonah just like mugging around and being silly and maybe not being not having to compete with, say, Damien's gigantic personality in a way. Not to say anything ill about Damien Abraham, because I love him, but right, like just to see them go off on their own and do something just fun and light and happy is really nice. And so yeah, I've been down with both of these Jade Hairpin songs. This second one I like a lot, quite a bit, and yeah, so I'm excited. Like, this reminds me a little bit of. There's a band out of Montreal called Pottery that's getting a lot of buzz right now that has a record. Well, I don't know. That's probably not coming out when it's supposed to, because it's supposed to come out in a few weeks. So I'm sure it's been delayed like everything else. But Pottery has a record coming out called like Welcome to Bobby's Motel. And the first EP that they released before that was, you know, it was a decent. Like a decent garage rock record, but it seemed like it played it maybe a little bit too safe. But then the songs they released from that full length have just been like wacky and expansive and just like just surprisingly adventurous. And I feel like the Jade Hairpins stuff is falling along those same lines. Where if you think back to when Jade Hairpins first debuted, they had a 10-inch that came out on Merge that was released the same day as Dozier Dreams came out, the last Fucked Up record. And it was fine, but it didn't like ooze personality in the same way that the full-length stuff from them has. So yeah, so I'm cool with that. This other band, Masterpiece Machine, only showed up on the internet like earlier today. And I've not delved too much into that yet. It's definitely more on the industrial end of things, which is not necessarily my cup of tea, but I'm totally down to explore it because, again, I have faith in the people that are making it. John, what's your read?
Well, I just love how effed up – I mean, honestly, as a fan, effed up really is the best kind of band, like the Melvins, like Crass back in the heyday. Like, I'm trying to think of other maybe modern equivalents. There are bands that just exploding with creativity and that they go in this direction, they go in that direction. And every new release is something new and something fresh and something interesting. I definitely am digging the new Jade Hairpins releases. But two things is A, this is a concern I had since they signed the Matador. But of course, Chemistry of Common Life, fantastic record. Dose Your Dreams, fantastic record. David Comes to Life, good, maybe a little too careful and gentle, if you will, is that I love the edginess and the danger. I don't mean lyrical, I mean conceptual. edginess, danger, weirdness, threateningness of effed up, and how they like Dose Your Dreams to me was this is the ultimate effed up album because it just goes far out and it keeps going and going and going. And to me, most college rock or however you want to define it is actually kind of safe. It's like we're going to keep things gentle and within a certain range. We're going to rock, but not rock too hard, so you don't have to get too excited. And I am digging Jade Hairpins. I just hope that the effed up guys don't fall into that trap. But I don't think they will because this is pretty dancey. But it's a possibility. And if they do, well, it's not the end of the world. And they're always permutating and changing. So, but I do love how effed up is. Of course, again, the counterattack is the industrial thing, which is totally relatively dangerous and powerful, which is cool. That's the cool. The other thing is, and myself especially, Punk News especially, and pretty much every website, maybe we've dissected effed up too much. They're like, oh, are they getting along? Are they fighting? You know, how come only some people are on this record, not everybody else? I mean, the main focus of the last record was that Damien kind of stepped back and said, well, you know, I don't need to drive the ship this time. And with a lot of bands, there's always that argument is, you know, how expendable is the lead singer? And he's usually not, but sometimes he is. And of course, lead singers love it. And I'm not saying this is the case of effed up, but like I'll use Judas Priest or even the Rolling Stones. Well, actually both sides of the thing, you know, Rob Halford left Judas Priest and Judas Priest was like, we don't need Rob Halford. And it turns out that they kind of did. And so that kind of gave Halford kind of more weight when he came back. By contrast, when Mick Jagger put out his solo album, I think I love Mick Jagger's solo album. He was thinking, you know, maybe I don't need the Rolling Stones. Maybe I can just be Mick Jagger. And of course that album didn't do that great. And so that gave Keith Richards more pull with regards to the band going forward. And so one does wonder how much of this is just people exploding with creativity and how much is it inner band dysfunction and how much does that really matter? And here's why it matters to a degree is I love effed up, but if Damien's not in effed up, it's not quite the same, you know, and I think these singles show that and not that they're bad because they're very good, but they don't have quite the distinctiveness that effed up has with Damien's sonic voice and his lyrical perspective. And of course, the argument always is that Damien wants to do the more punk stuff and the other guy's not so much. And of course, I like the punk stuff. So I don't know how much to read it. Should we read inner band dynamics into this? Or is this just creative people being creative? What do you think?
I think it's creative people being creative, which I'm always in favor of. Always. But I will say that the single didn't speak to me in the same way as the last one did. And like, it's interesting, Adam, that you said that it's not, that the song is like not a joke, even though they're like clearly going like so far off genre from the stuff that we've come to expect from these guys. But actually I did sort of feel like the song came off a little bit like maybe like a parody or something. It felt like now they've gotten so far from the style that's like in their hearts or like in their blood, not to be corny about it, but like it felt like they'd given themselves like a very fun assignment of like, oh, let's try to write a song in this style. It reminded me of like, yeah, like some like late 80s, like early 90s, like new wave meets industrial, like Happy Mondays meets, I don't know, like Nitzer Ebb or something. Like, but yeah, it didn't feel like music like coming from like the heart to me, but it certainly feels like fun. But it's interesting. We talked about whatever that other song was.
Jay Hairpin?
Yes.
Yeah.
That felt like just like the sheer glee of like writing a pop song and kind of like throwing off the shackles of it having to be like too punky or too hardcore, but it still felt like enough rooted in like who they are as people and songwriters that it still felt very like genuine to me. I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, this one I'm like, listen, hats off, like make weird, crazy music, make a weird video with subtitles. And I didn't really totally get the video, but like do it. But like this didn't grab me as much.
Hallie, do you think it's the end of effed up? Do you think Zodiacs will continue? Do you think effed up will come out with another album, say like 2 or 3 years?
I sort of feel like effed up might be done. But I don't know. Maybe I feel like maybe Adam would have more of like a gut sense of that.
I mean, I just have what was I supposed to say twot, as if it was like the the past tense of tweeted or whatever. I mean, like, so the fucked up Twitter account, which I think is Mike that runs it. On April 6th, he said, "I was working on 5 different FU records before this started. You might need another era of isolation to listen to them once they're all released," right? So, you know, that's one of those things that's a loaded statement, though, because, like, as John was saying, Damien's role as, or is role the right word? Like, Damien is not necessarily the linchpin of fucked up from an organizational standpoint, right? Like, in a way, it's Mike that's in the driver's seat right now. So for an official fucked up source to say there's 5 different fucked up records being worked on does not say anything one way or the other about whether the band as we knew them, like it doesn't imply that like the band of Chemistry of Common Life is going to be that band on those 5 records, right? It means the name will continue for sure. But as a unit, there will be other chapters in that story. But in a way, and I think I've become more accepting of this fact, I think, as I don't know, as I've gotten older or something. But when you're a band that has a handful of records that are quote unquote classics, right, or that had a big impact or something like that, I'm less worried than I was, I think, when I was younger about that band continuing to exist. If only because I've continuously seen the situations where the bands that I really like all broke up or stopped playing, but everyone that was in that band went on to do cool stuff. And I would rather, in retrospect, have the cool stuff that everyone made after the fact than I would the band stay together forever and keep doing their thing. And that is a complete flip side of what I believed as a kid. So I mean, when I was a teenager, it was really important to me that say like Bad Religion continues to exist forever, and that there's a new Bad Religion record that comes out every once in a while, and it's going to sound like Bad Religion, and it's going to be cool and great, and I'm going to love it. And then a few years later, there'd be another one, and I'd be able to go see that band, you know, touring and playing shows until they all died of old age. And that was my understanding of the world. That's what I wanted, right? And if a band that I liked broke up, it was a tragedy for me, because then, oh, I can't, you know, that it's gone. That music is gone. I can't go see those guys anymore. They're not going to make any more of them, right? But I look at, say, like the bands that I mentioned earlier in this show with regards to that reader question, right? Like, you know, Attack in Black was one of my favorite bands. They were around for a few years. They broke up. But after they broke up, the 4 people that were in that band plus the 4 or 5 people, let's say, that were in their orbit, they all in various combinations have released something like 2 dozen records in the past decade since that band split. And some of those records are my favorite records right now. And I'm excited to follow what those personalities are doing and the kind of music those people are making kind of when the shackles are off of them. And I don't feel loss from that band not being around, because I look and I'm like, man, like all these guys, like, you know, they got older and wiser and they all went in their own weird directions, and some of the directions didn't work, but they went in them. Right. And they didn't feel like they were confined to, you know, driving around in the same van with the same 4 guys, you know, playing the same hits over and over. And I would almost rather that happen in my fandom at the stage that I'm at than everything just gets put under glass. So if all of a sudden fucked up was like, you know what, Mike and Damien hate each other and we're not around anymore, and we're never gonna play those songs again, and we're done, and blah, and they blew up. Well, you kind of knew that, like, you know what? Especially that band in particular, Damien's going to do something cool afterwards. Like,
Mike, see, I don't think he will, though. I think he's over music, to tell you the truth, to a degree.
You know what, though? Damien will go and he'll do like a whole bunch of wrestling stuff for a while, but then he'll show up with some like scrappy little hardcore band that is the antithesis of fucked up as far as like ambition and planning, but it's just fun and screaming at you, and that'd be cool. But even if he's done, then what does that happen? Then, you know, Ben's going to go out, Jonah's going to go out, Mike's going to go out. They're all going to go out and do stuff. And it's like I'm looking at it like gardening right now. Like every once in a while, you got to like lop a branch off the tree just to like let growth happen. And I'm not wishing that upon Damien or fucked up or anything like that. I'm just saying that if it happens, then I'm down for the ride.
See, I can agree with that, and I can disagree with that. I can agree with that. If you look at Vivian Girls, amazing band. When they broke up, Cassie Ramone solo, awesome. Katie Goodman solo, awesome. And it was each of their contributions purified, and I really dug that. Other example, Sleep. When Sleep broke up, Alice's Narrows does kind of the droney mind trip stuff, which is awesome. Matt Pike does the thrash side, and it was freaking awesome. But sometimes when bands break up, it's just like I was listening to Bauhaus today. I'm like, oh my god, Bauhaus is so good. But when they broke up, it's like none of their solo stuff was that interesting. You know what I mean? Because that chemistry wasn't there. Now, arguably, you could say, yeah, but John, you know what though? There's so many effed up side projects, and some of them are really, really cool that you don't need to worry about that. And I agree. But there is magic with Damien's, you know, not standard hardcore voice, but Damien's distinctively hardcore voice with Mike Halachuk's whacked out, far out space exploration. And it would be a shame to lose that, I would argue. But listen, let's hit two more stories, and then we'll wrap up the episode. Let's talk about something that is maybe not so much on the further edges of space, but perhaps something, an old thing coming back to being new again. Bite Me Bambi. They released a video last month. I think it was called like Cupid or something like that. They also just recently released a cover of The Offspring's I Want You, which actually I was surprised isn't even during Offspring's classic era. It was doing kind of the later era. But anyways, the interesting thing about Bite Me Bambi, and I dug both videos, is that if you've got your ear to the ground, you're hearing a lot of early buzz about this band, and it reminds me very much of the early buzz of both about the Interrupters and Bad Cop, Bad Cop. I like Bad Cop, Bad Cop a lot. I like the Interrupters a lot too, actually. And so you're hearing the earliest signals of just different people in different areas saying, oh, Bite Me Bambi, Bite Me Bambi, Bite Me Bambi. So is this going to be the next band to blow up? But further, all around, and this happens once in a while, and it's usually a false alarm, but I've got a suspicion that maybe it's not this time, is all around I'm hearing fourth wave ska, or not fourth wave ska, but ska is coming back, and people want ska again. People want good time music with brains, and that's what ska is, and it's coming back. And most of those bands are more two-tone influenced than they are third wave influenced. So the question is, Bite Me Bambi, is it going to be the next band to pop, like Interrupters, like Bad Cop, Bad Cop? And is ska back again for another round? And is that a good thing? Halle Bullet, ska, pro, con, overdone? Where do you stand?
I mean, people have been heralding a fourth wave of ska for like the last 3 years, I feel like. So I don't know. It's probably inevitable. But I don't know. But I think my problem with this is like that this to me does not have brains. I don't find any brains in this music. I think that singer seems super talented, and I just want her to find like better songs to sing. But the world is like a gloomy place right now. And actually, you know, maybe ska is just like what we need right now. So whether I would listen to this or not, I'm fully in support of like ska coming back. Maybe we just need something just upbeat. Just something upbeat would probably be really refreshing right now. But I'd prefer, like you said, that it had a little bit more brains. I guess that's my only bone to pick about this music. Mm.
I have a theory that this band and the other, I don't know what wave this is supposed to be of ska bands that have...
I think we're like the 17th by now, to tell you the truth.
So yeah, I'm increasingly convinced that it has nothing to do with ska. I don't mean that as a purist. I mean that the root of it is not that these people were, let's say, even like, I'm not talking about the band members. I'm talking about, I guess, the fandom that's driving it. Like, I don't think this is necessarily rooted in the next wave of ska or ska coming back, or it being time for ska to not be a joke anymore and everyone's going to really get down with it. I think this is more related to 90s nostalgia. I feel like these bands are riffing directly off of like early No Doubt and Save Ferris and stuff like that than they are ska as a genre. And you've heard all kinds of bands in the indie rock world right now are circling back to grunge, and you know there's all sorts of like 90s influences that are appearing all over the place and being reevaluated in the wider indie rock universe. And I feel that this is more a function of that than it is necessarily, you know, something about a wave of ska. Because I mean, I look at this and just like even the way that these videos are composed and the level of goofiness that's there, like it's just also 90s to me, right? Like it's all.
I love goofy music videos, though. I love goofy music videos.
I'm not slamming it for being a goofy music video, but I'm just saying that it's like if I had to draw the family tree line from one to the other, like I draw a line from this to like, you know, Real Big Fish videos, and I draw a line from this to, oh god, I'm just trying to think what some of those early No Doubt videos were that were like, I don't know, like the Sunday
Trapped
morning video
or
something. Which again, to say nothing ill of any of those things.
Morning is an excellent song, Adam. An excellent song.
It is. I love that video, actually. As an Italian person, having like a big picnic full of spaghetti is really what I want, right? There's a vibe and aesthetic in that 90s stuff that I see showing up in the Interrupters, but that's so colored by like the Hellcat linkage to it, but really in this stuff too, where it seems like it's tied up in that sort of 90s revivalism. And if you scrape the ska stuff off the surface, I guess this is maybe what Hallie was saying, I don't really think there's too much there beneath it, right? Whereas like if you were to sell me on there being a true next wave of ska, I would expect there to be something else going on there, which is why I had always personally championed like the bands that were doing weird stuff, like say like the Stubborn Records scene coming out of New York at that time. Not so much the Slacker. I mean, the Slackers were like really traditionalist with it, but if you looked at like the stuff that say like King Django was doing, where it was like it was half ska music and half klezmer at times, and it was just like. And there was hip hop influences that were coming into it, and all sorts of sort of strange, you know, takes on it. That clearly this was a person that had sat around and listened to a Trojan Box set a whole bunch, but also they were trying to take it in weird ways. Like there was a band called Pilfers that was on the Mojo label alongside Real Big Fish that I thought was doing like interesting stuff for a while. That was in that vein, and then even people drew that line to bomb music industry. Not that I would ever really call bomb music industry a ska band, right? But where they said that, like, you know, these are people that came out of that scene and had that knowledge, and they took it to the next step. And if there was to be an American wave to come, I would have thought it would have come from one of those groups. And I think maybe it just went a little bit differently, because there is a fucking genre of people right now that make music that sounds like Jeff Rosenstock. Like, is fascinating to me. It's like you can go around on Bandcamp and like Jeff Rosenstock is a genre. Like there are people in towns all over the place that are making songs that kind of sound like, you know, bomb the music industry songs in a way that's super 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 reverent and playful, and I'm not knocking it or anything, but it's like if he was the one to inspire the next wave of ska, well he inspired a wave of something. It's just it's you know, following the trail that he blazed more than it is, I think, like standing on the shoulders of the ska people before you. But yeah, now someone wrote into the show once and they said that there are tons of active and interesting ska bands that are popping up and playing in, like I bet, what is it? Was it Latin America? Was it Mexico?
I think he was saying it was people of Mexican background in Southern California.
Yeah. So there is this, there's this crazy, like Latinx ska universe that I have no, I don't have an in on, and I'm way more willing to believe that whole genre kind of like went somewhere in the world and then someone else took it and did something with it than I am looking for like where's the next band of American white goofballs to do something with it.
So, well, and it's not even the next group. I mean, like, because aren't the guys in this band, like, they were in bands like Save Ferris. It's like literally just the same people.
There's a guy in this band that looks really like Aaron from Real Big Fish. Like, he has the same fucking sideburns. And I can't tell if it's him or if it's just like the young clone of him.
I think it's not. He's not young. I think he's probably the same age as that guy, but I don't think he's actually that guy. Right. John, do you know? I think they're in Save Ferris and my superhero or something. I think like all these guys. I think most of these guys were in that last wave of ska bands, and now they're like sort of having nostalgia for like their own shtick, which like I also just kind of I don't like.
This is off on a tangent, but I argued with a couple, not argued, but I guess debated or talked to some other musicians regarding this. I'm interested in your perspective. So I'm not going to name names. I'll take you guys off the podcast. But there was a band where it was like a 45-year-old guy and like three very young women. Mm-hmm. Is that weird and creepy or is that like interesting and cool?
Yeah. Okay. So I know exactly what band you're talking about, I think. And I didn't find that creepy.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm like, this is reading is creepy to me. So I said to my mom, and this is when I was like 30. I was like, Ma, if I was in a band with like four 14-year-old girls, that'd be weird, right? And she's like, yeah, that'd be really weird. And I'd be really concerned. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought, you know?
Yeah, so this also struck me as kind of weird, right? These guys are all older, but they've like got this like really true, like honestly, truly talented and beautiful young woman fronting their band. And I just was like trying to imagine, like, you know, because those guys, I think I can criticize them because they're my age. Like, I think if like me and like the women from the Dance Hall Crashers like decided to have a new band, but it had like a 19, like 22-year-old boy singer, like I think people would find that very odd. I'm with you. I'm finding something a little bit creepy about it. And yet, you know, then I still have to go like, you know, I have to go back to the thing of like, I really, if they're liking making music together and they're like enjoying expressing this thing and she wants to be playing music with these older guys, then like fine, like cool, like it's like I don't want to judge it and then I do kind of judge it.
I just don't want to call it a wave or a movement.
Yes, I think that's definitely fair. I agree with that.
We're running a little long, but we're having fun. Let's wrap this up with one last story, another very divisive story. And one of the nice things about punk is things that are like super divisive that have people like fighting to the death over don't matter. Like in the great context of the world, don't matter at all. That's one of the things I love about punk rock. Bob Villain. Bob Villain is a UK artist, and he is very influenced by the early anarcho scene, specifically Crass Records. And his music, he's got a new single out. It's called We Live Here. And the brunt of Bob Villain's music is that he play like the background of the music is it's hip hop, but it's extremely influenced and samples all the anarcho punk bands. So it's basically like a beat, but then the guitar is like anarcho punk guitar. Then he raps over top of it, but he almost raps in like a Steve Ignorant or Colin Jerwood cadence. And so it kind of really walks the line between hip hop and anarcho screaming or yelling or however you want to phrase it. And this video kind of blew up, and it was actually, it did blow up. It's like 100,000 views or something, which for punk rock, that's insane these days. And it was very divisive. And as far as I know, Steve Ignorin, Stig Miller of Amoebix, the guitar player from Poison Girls, one of the Omega Tribes, and the one little Indian, the main flux of Pink Indian guys, they all independently commented on all this, and they had the same opinion. And Hallie Bullet, did you dig it? Did you think it was cool? Because it can be very hard to merge rap and rock, if you will. Very few artists do it successfully. And what do you think the first wave anarcho-punkers thought of it?
I loved this, first of all. I totally loved it. I'm not sure that I feel like it's rap.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, to me, this is just like punk and hardcore and maybe something a little. And I don't know if it was a white guy, I wonder, would people be saying it was rap or hip hop?
See,
you know what I'm saying?
If it was a white guy, I'd be like, oh, it's a cheesy white rapper, because there was a white crust punk rapper that he was a nice guy, but it was really bad. It was like really bad. And it was like, whew. And so I think this guy is actually doing it pretty good. I dug this track, but I
love it. I think it's amazing. I'm curious to know what people are saying about it.
Adam White, place your bets. Was Steve Ignorin and Stig Miller pro or con?
I'm going to go pro.
The first wave anarcho-punk community, which I am appointing myself judge of their collective opinion. They, or not judge, what's the word, census taker of their collective opinion, overwhelmingly, extremely positive. They all loved it.
Huh.
Meanwhile, a lot of the first wave punk fans hated it.
Hmm.
That to me fits like an overall theme that this show has kind of come back to a bunch of times, not just this episode, but in general, which is that you get a certain opinion of from like the punk rock fandom that calcifies onto a certain sound. And the people that actually are making that music are, they're both far less precious about it, but also far more accepting of other takes and things like that. So that does not surprise me.
Well, they have it. I dug it. I think you should go check out Bob Dylan. He only has like 5 singles out, and very well maybe the next thing. We'll see. I'm going to play a track, and then we'll wrap this on up. I'm going to play a track by Candy Now. Adam, who's Candy Now?
Who's Candy Now? Candy Now is your buddy Blag.
Candy Now is Blag Dye. We'll say his project, and that it's Blag Dye stepping outside of the Dwarves context sonically and kind of doing pop or soul or even lounge music. There's a few Candy Now releases. The most famous one is the album where it was him and Angelina Persephone's Bees, and they did kind of a Nancy Sinatra kind of thing. But the new incarnation of Candy Now is Blag Dye and Lisa of the Bell Rays. And Blag does most of the music. Lisa does some of the lyrics. Blag does some of the lyrics. And Lisa is a great singer. And a lot of the stuff is kind of a throwback to 60s, kind of like Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone, 60s and 70s civil rights soul music. And that's what Candy Now is. And so this is Hear Me Knockin', which I wonder if it's a Rolling Stones homage. So this is Lisa of the Bell Rays and Blag Dahlia doing Hear Me Knockin' as Candy Now.
Been beat down and ignored, but it ain't gonna fly no more. I'm street down to the core, gonna get what I'm fighting for. And I won't hesitate to snatch love from the jaws of hate. This fire's gonna burn, and I ain't gonna wait my turn. Now, hey, can you hear me knocking? If you're in my way,
And we're back. Hallie Bullet, yet another successful episode. That's what I'm saying. A lot of debate, a lot of back and forth, a lot of analysis. But I think we had some fun.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of analysis. I cannot believe how long we talked about, what was it? The Jade Hairpin song. That was that like a 20-minute discussion? I loved it. I absolutely love talking to you guys. Thanks for letting me do it.
Adam White, as per Hallie Bullet, the Canadian conversation was extended this week. Does that warm your heart? Oh, your cold heart.
It does. It does. That's I'm just trying to force my agenda on everything that we do so that it fits with what I'm trying to make happen.
Well, thanks for listening. The countdown of 500 has begun. You can reach that podcast at Punk News, podcast@punknews.org. Oh, I forgot. We got a Facebook now, facebook.com/thepunknewspodcast. We got some exclusive stuff over there. And we'll see you next week.